You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by Casper. You got to try this mattress. Go to casper.com/brain and get $50 off your order. Make sure to use the promo code BRAIN when checking out to get the discount.
Oh, sounds so comfortable.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of this show I call The Overwhelmed Brain. This is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical, down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. Everything I talk about on this show should not be mistaken for actual medical advice or treatment, and is intended to be for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. What you'll find here is an increase in your emotional intelligence, a strengthening of your self-worth and self-esteem, the motivation to be your authentic self, and the forward momentum to help you learn, heal, grow, and evolve. All right, I'm going to get into the topic of something I learned along the way when I was doing a lot of research and in getting into coaching. And there's a lot that I was taught that I took with me, and there's a lot that I made up along the way. And there's a lot of healing that I went through, because when you start any process of wanting to help others, you learn the process of helping yourself as well. At least you hope you learn that process. And one of the things that I learned that helped me and helps others is that everyone makes the best choice they can. It's similar to saying everyone has everything they need to make the choice that they need to make for themselves at that time. That's not entirely something I agree with. Like, everyone has all the ability and the resources they need in the moment they need it. I don't agree with that 100%, even though I teach that. I teach that you do have the resources you need. You do have the knowledge you need, but a lot of us don't make the decisions that we need to make or take the steps that we need to take because we don't have the courage, or we're not sure what's going to happen. We're afraid of the unknown. There's a lot of reasons that we don't make the choices that we make, even though we have the tools to make those choices. But, you know, some tools are, well, they feel missing sometimes. Like, you're in a situation, someone's in front of you, and you're about to, or you want to say something, and you decide not to, but then later on you say to yourself, I should have said something. I should have said this. I should have said that. I should have told them that I didn't like the way they were treating me, or I didn't like the way they were treating that other person. Damn it, I should have said something. So you have that in you. You have the ability to choose to say something or not, to stand up for yourself or not, to stand up for a loved one or not, to honor your boundaries, to do things that are in alignment with your values, to show up as your authentic self. But sometimes you choose not to. And you choose not to because there are other factors involved, like taking the leap of faith of what's going to happen because there are consequences to our behavior. When I say this, there are consequences. My boss might fire me, my wife or my husband or my boyfriend or my girlfriend might leave me, you know, that person might yell at me, that person might hit me, or worse. So we consider the consequences, and then we go, yes, I know what to do, but I don't want to do it. So the idea that we all have the resources we need doesn't necessarily mean we're going to use those resources, because what's going to happen next? It's always what's going to happen next. And that's why it's kind of nice to live in the present moment. Well, it's nice and it's not nice, because if you live in the present moment and just say what's on your mind in the moment, you could cause a lot of trouble for yourself. Although I kind of live like that sometimes, yet I've learned to be diplomatic over the years. I've learned to be tactful over the years, so that when I do say what's on my mind, it doesn't come out like a steamroller and crush the other person. I won't just point at someone and say, "You're a dirty, rotten SOB, you son of a whatever," and have that turn out to be good for me because I stood up for myself. I won't do that, but I will use those I statements, like, "You know what? I feel like you're disrespecting me, so I'm not going to take it any longer." That doesn't mean I'm going to hurt you or do anything against you. I'm just going to get out of this situation. Or I might say, "You need to back off. You need to back off because I'm feeling disrespected, or I feel like you're violating me in some way." I wouldn't use those words. It's always going to be context specific, but I will say something if I'm disagreeing with something in that moment. If there's something going on that I don't like, that I don't feel good about. So I could go on and on with that, but what I really want to talk about is the very first thing I said, which is everyone makes the best choice they can. And what that means, even though it's a simple sentence, you could probably figure it out. But if you look at this in depth, then you might look at someone and go, "Why did they make that choice? Why did that person say that to that person? Why didn't that person leave that abusive person? Why did that person take it and get yelled at by that person? Or why did I," like my mom, she said, "Why did I stay so long in an abusive relationship when I should have left 39 years ago?" You know, some massive number that now that she knows that she can, and I'm going to put words in her mouth here, survive without the abuser in her life. And I'm not saying that's what she felt, but if you were to look at her situation, she might think that it's scarier to be outside of that abusive relationship than it is to be inside of it. It's the devil you know as opposed to the devil you don't. I think that's the saying, the evil you know. I don't know, but the idea that she was in a relationship, and after she got out of that relationship, she realized, "I should have left earlier." She made the best choice she knew how at the time because of what she believed about herself, what she believed about the world, what she believed she was capable of doing, the fact that she probably didn't trust her own decisions. I mean, how many times have you gotten to a point in your life, and maybe you haven't, but there are times that a lot of people get into a position where they've been through a lot, whether that's emotional abuse or other stuff, that they don't trust their own decisions anymore. I don't trust myself. So I'm not sure if I make this decision, if it's the right one. I mean, I think I've said that a lot, actually. I don't know if this is the right decision. I'm afraid to take this step because I'm not sure what's going to happen, because I don't know if I can trust my instincts here. I don't know if I can trust my thought process. What if I'm wrong? God, how many times has that stopped you from making a decision in your life? What if I'm wrong? And then you never make the decision. And then you stay in a situation that doesn't serve you, that is toxic to you, that makes you feel bad about yourself. And you stay in that situation longer than you should have, using your own words, like, "I should have left. Damn it, why didn't I leave? Damn it, why didn't I say anything?" Because you couldn't. You couldn't have possibly said or done anything differently, because you're not the same person that you were as you are now. You can go back in time and be a different person. Then, if you have a time machine, then you have no excuse, because then you can go back and make a decision. But because you weren't the same person, you didn't have the same experience, you didn't have the foresight that and you didn't have the knowledge that you have today, so there's no way you could have made a different decision. So everything worked out as it was supposed to work out, because you wouldn't have made any other decision if you could go back in time and do it all over again, and you didn't have any new knowledge. if that makes sense. So my point is here, if you have any disappointment in yourself, if you're holding on to any regrets, like, oh, why didn't I do this? Why couldn't I have thought differently? I want to let you off the hook, because you cannot possibly make a decision or take action when you don't have the ability to do so. You don't. You don't have the ability. Otherwise, you would have made the decision. Right? You didn't have the ability to make that decision or take that action because you didn't know how. You didn't have the right tools or resources or energy or money or, you know, nothing. It's like when everything is in alignment, everything goes smoothly. And when it's not in alignment, you kind of have to wait for the alignment to happen. So you can't do it until the alignment happens. So this brings up the question, where do you get the ability to make the decisions that you need to make? And really the answer is, you get it from learning how to do what you need to do and gaining the courage to do it. It's not just courage, it's confidence. It's believing in yourself, believing in your decisions, believing that you're worthy of taking these steps for yourself. There's another big one. How many times has a low self-worth or low self-esteem stopped you from doing something for yourself, regardless of the consequences? Regardless of what might happen, because you're worth it. I'm saying that to you. You're worth it. You are worth these decisions that come up in your life, and you are worth taking steps for yourself. And because of that, the consequences, even though they could be harsh, they still should be considered. Shouldn't be what holds you back, especially if you're worth the decision to do something good for yourself, to do something that takes toxicity out of your life, to get out of a bad situation. And this could be anything. This could be a coworker yells at you and demeans you in front of other coworkers. And now you're in a predicament where you can take it and feel embarrassed, humiliated, and other feelings that come with that. And I'm not telling you what to do in this situation. I'm saying that there's a check-in moment for yourself. Like, what's happening inside of me? I'm feeling disrespected. I'm feeling like this person is overpowering me, dominating me, and I don't like that feeling. Where can I go with this? Where should I go with this? You could stand up and say, hey, I don't like when you do that. Don't do that again. And they might say something even worse. There's a consequence right there. They might back off because, hey, who is this standing up for themselves? What? Or they may just shrug their shoulders and go, whatever. I mean, usually a person that wants you to look bad in front of others doesn't really take advice in the moment, especially in front of those people. But if you make a different decision in that moment than you did before, suddenly they have to deal with a different person. And that's hard to do. It's hard to make those decisions when you're not sure what's going to happen, especially if you've never done it before. But that's sometimes hard to do in the moment, because if you had the know-how and the confidence and the courage, and you were able to consider all the options in those nanoseconds, only then would you have enough to make a decision or take action. And even then, it still comes down to whether you believe you're doing the right thing or not. I mean, it's like a mystery, right? Something happens, and you're either going to react in a way that serves you, or in a way that serves someone else, or makes you feel powerless. And then what happens next is based on what just happened. So if you feel powerless in your reaction, then you will continue to take that powerless feeling into the future. I mean, think about that. Every action or reaction that you have to other people is what you take into your next moment and into your next interaction with them. That, I'm going to say, kind of scares me, because if I feel powerless and defeated by someone and I don't take action in the moment, I know that they're going to have power over me in the next moment. And this doesn't have to be something like really impactful, like someone beating you up or abusing you or anything like that. This could be the simple stuff you might have to deal with when you're kind to people and they're not kind back. Or maybe you're not kind to people, I don't know. But when people don't treat you like you deserve to be treated. I think that's an important point to make, is that you have to come to a place inside of you that you absolutely believe and know that you deserve to be treated with respect and kindness. You have to know that inside and out. When you know that and you base all your decisions on that, then it's a lot easier to have the resources, to have the knowledge and the ability to make the best choice you can. Because that's your foundation. When you have a shaky foundation, I don't necessarily think I'm worthy. I'm not too confident in my own ability to choose, to make decisions. Then your reactions in life, your behavior, and what you say all come from that place. That's why I teach self-worth and self-esteem and showing up in the world as your authentic self. Because when you can show up with authenticity and a lot of self-worth and a lot of self-confidence, then you don't have to think before you respond, because it's already there. You're already in alignment in yourself, knowing that you deserve to be treated fairly, with respect, with integrity, with kindness, and support for who you are. Boy, you line that up in yourself, and you can show up in any situation and feel good about yourself. So when someone attempts to put you down, even subtly, like the subtle signs of emotional abuse, for example, where they make you feel guilty or they make you feel like you're a problem, you're the one that's wrong all the time, then you can stand up for yourself going, no, I know myself well enough. I know I'm trying to do the right thing all the time. I know I'm a kind person. I know I'm moral. I know I'm ethical. If you don't know you are, then check in with yourself. What are you doing that's not moral? What are you doing that's not ethical? Maybe you won't find anything, and maybe you find that you have false beliefs inside of you. Because if you're trying to do the right thing, you're trying to be moral and ethical, and I'm just throwing those terms out because they're kind of umbrella terms. You know, you're trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to be a good person. When that's inside of you, then you can bring that confidence of who you are into every situation and bring that out in those situations if need be. You don't have to flaunt it. You just have to be it. And people will respect it. At least the people that are worth having in your life. The non-toxic ones. The ones who love you and support your happiness and want to nurture their relationship with you, instead of the ones that just want from you or are selfish and just want for themselves. I'm not saying all those people are bad, but if you feel that they're toxic in your life, then you need to have that solid foundation of self-esteem, self-worth, confidence, courage, and knowing that you deserve to be treated fairly and with respect. You need to bring that into every situation, especially with those kind of people, because those are the ones that are going to test you to the limit. I think you know what I mean. Now, sometimes we get into a situation where things just aren't bad enough yet. It isn't bad enough yet, so I'm not even going to look into making a decision. I mean, I think that's what my wife thought before she left me. It isn't bad enough yet, so why go through all the trouble? Because then I'll have to, you know, live with my mom, and we'll have to go through a divorce, and I've been through that before, and I don't want to go through that again. And then she might have had the thought, there's still a chance it could get better. And of course, I planted that seed of chance in her mind by telling her, I'm working on it. I'm doing what I can to work on myself. And as much as I learned about myself in the marriage, I still was not treating her the way she deserved to be treated. And that really reflected how much I learned in myself and how much personal growth I did, because she wasn't getting any happier which meant I wasn't working on the right stuff. Well, let me rephrase that. I was working on myself as much as it was in my ability to understand what I needed to work on. Because we get stuck there, don't we? What do I need to work on? Okay, I'll work on this. That seems like it might be a problem. And then you work on that. But in my case, my wife was still unhappy because I was still doing the same behavior toward her. And it wasn't until the last year of my marriage where we separated and I actually had, we both actually had time to ourselves to work on ourselves, where I learned the most important components that I needed to work on in myself. Oh, you don't want me to judge you. Ah, got it. I should have learned that lesson years ago because I knew I had that in me, but I still had a belief that the other person needs to change, not me. The other person, if they change, then we'll both be happy. Oh, well, if I rely on someone else to change, then I'll never be happy anyway. So I need to change in myself. And if I can't change, if I'm still judgmental, then I need to get away from what I'm judging. Not only to help me heal, but to get them out of a toxic situation. Because sometimes the people that love us don't leave us when we're judging them. And when they feel bad about themselves because it's something we did to them. And that's hard. And I'm not saying that you have to take responsibility for their decisions. But we do have to understand what might be happening in a relationship when we're making someone feel bad about themselves. Ouch. So I like to figure out how I do that. How am I making you feel bad? And that's when a lot of personal growth took place for me, is that I went back to me and decided to take responsibility for everything that I was doing to make her or anyone in my life feel bad about themselves or feel bad being with me. So I could go off on a huge tangent there, but I'm going to stay on this topic. I'm almost done because I want you to get to a point where the fear of the unknown is less scary than the fear of the known. And what I mean is that you are making the decision that you believe is right for you in the moment. You typically don't make the decision that maybe you need to make because of your fear of the unknown. And I'd like you to not fear the unknown. I'd like you to just weigh the circumstances of staying in the position you're in, whether that's a stance that you take, whether that's a relationship you're in. I'd like you to immediately weigh the circumstances of staying in that stance or position. Because if you're being yelled at and you feel humiliated and you don't talk up or speak up or stand up or leave, then you might take that humiliation with you. And you have to evaluate your life to go, do I want to take this humiliation or whatever feeling that you get with me into future circumstances? If the answer is yes, then it's a no-brainer. That's easy. I'll just take this with me. Hopefully you don't feel that way. Sometimes you do have to pick your battles. I understand that too. But I want you to get to a point where you are choosing to serve yourself while loving others. I mean, that's powerful. If you can look at someone and go, I love you, but you're doing this and it hurts. That's a pretty potent statement, even though you may not say it that way. I love you, but I need to do this for me. I love you, but you're disrespecting me. I love you, but I always like to come at people with that energy. I love you, but that's not going to work for me. Or I love you, but you're disrespecting me. I mean, if you're in that situation, the idea is not to be hurtful towards someone. It's to be protective of self by showing someone that, hey, I still care about you, but you're not allowed to do that to me. I think that's a great place to be inside. So let me try to wrap this up because I went off a little bit regarding everyone makes the best choice they can. When you look back at your life or you look at anyone else's life and you say, they should have done this differently, I should have made a different choice. I should have done this sooner. I should have done this later. Again, give yourself a break. You couldn't have done anything differently. You couldn't have. Because you made the decision that you made because of who you were and what you believed and what you thought at the time. You just couldn't have done anything differently. So what you did was perfect. It really was. It was perfect. Like I said, you don't have to hold on to any regrets. What you did was perfect. It may not have worked out the way you wanted. There is that. I understand. I know. I could look back and go, damn it. Why did I sell my condo? Damn it. Why didn't I fire that property manager that took care of my condo? They did a terrible job. And I could have maybe kept that condo. Or damn it. You know, XYZ. I could have done this. I could have done that. But I wasn't the same person. I wouldn't have made those decisions. And yes, I experienced losses. I'm sure you've experienced losses. And they were probably super important to you, maybe some of them. But you couldn't have done any better. You really couldn't have. And so any regrets that you're holding on to really come down to self-forgiveness. I want you to forgive yourself a break so that you don't have to take this with you into the next moment. Remember, how you respond and how you react and how you behave in every moment, you take that into the next moment. So if you respond in a way of, hey, I don't want to be disrespected, you take that into the next moment, and then people treat you differently. And you treat yourself differently. And you feel different about it. And if you liken that to holding on to a regret, oh, I regret that. I shouldn't have made that decision. Then guess what you're taking into the next moment? Regret. And I don't want you to take that regret. I want you to come to a place of, hey, you know what? I'll give you an example. Hey, you know what, Paul? Talking to myself. Or maybe I'll say self. I'm not sure. Hey, you know what, self? No, I think I like Paul. Hey, you know what, Paul? It's all right. You didn't know any better back then. And you made decisions that you believe were the right decisions at the time. You made decisions back then that didn't work out the way you wanted them to, but you did the best you could. I mean, that's like visiting your inner child. Hey, you did the best you can. Don't worry about it. I don't want you to take regret or resentment or anything like that into your next moment. I want you to take, no, damn it, I'm great. I've made mistakes. I've done stupid things. But you know what? I'm pretty damn good and I've learned a lot. And I'm going to take this new, confident, courageous, trusting in myself, believing in myself into the next moment. Or at least start to work on that. You're not the same person you were. You're not going to make the same decisions you did. You have the ability to make different decisions now. So where those decisions come from have to be in a different place. So if you're holding on to any resentments or regrets, then I want you to come to that place of self-forgiveness. I know I make it sound easy, but it's always a work in progress, right? Come to a place of at least beginning to forgive yourself for who you were, for the decisions that you made at the time, so that in the future when you make decisions, it's coming from a brighter, more confident, more knowing that you're worthy self. And just remember this, not all decisions that you made in the past would have turned out better than they did. I remember my girlfriend said, I shouldn't have gotten rid of my house. I loved that house. And then she follows it up with, well, 6 months later, a tornado did go through the yard and caused $20,000 worth of damage. And I go, oh, so if you made the decision to stay, maybe that wouldn't have turned out so great. Or maybe not. Who knows? But it doesn't mean if you went back in time and made a different decision that it would have been better today. It doesn't always mean that. That's why it's good to just accept what you've done, forgive yourself for who you were and the decisions that you made at the time. I mean, if you're holding on to any regrets or resentments, because the decisions that we've made in the past sometimes lead to what we need instead of what we want. We'll be right back with Ask Paul. We'll be right back. Well, my friend sent me an email the other day and said, "We're getting a new mattress. We're so excited." And I said, "Really? That's great. Did you need one?" He said, "Absolutely. Ours was getting really old. And my girlfriend was getting tired of rolling into my side of the bed because I weigh more." I said, "I totally get that. I'm about 70 pounds heavier than my girlfriend." And then I asked him what he paid for it. When he told me, my jaw dropped. I asked him, "Are the springs made of solid gold?" And he laughed, but he got what I meant. I said, "Why didn't you go to Casper?" And then he asked, "What's Casper?" Well, let me tell you about Casper. Casper is one of those experiences in life that does it right. What do? They do mattresses like no other. They're high quality and a great price. Casper is one of those companies that simply delivers. And by that, I mean when you buy a Casper mattress, not only do you get free delivery in the US or Canada, but they'll even pick it up for free if you're not completely satisfied within 100 days. Now, how much you want to bet that if my friend doesn't like the mattress he bought locally at a store, that he's going to have to pay a restocking fee? And not even that, what if they don't even accept returns on a mattress? Or if they do, what about return delivery? I doubt they're going to send another truck to pick it up. He'll probably have to bring it there himself. My point is, Casper knows you'll love the mattress, so they guarantee it by offering all of your money back and a free pickup if you're not satisfied for any reason. You simply can't beat that. It takes out all the risk. When a company offers this kind of guarantee, I listen closely. I want to learn more, and I want you to learn more too, because it's something I believe you should take advantage of. Free delivery of an obsessively engineered mattress at a price you won't believe, with 100 days to try it out, along with them picking it up if you don't like it, there's just no drawback. Just draw the covers up and over you and feel that combination of comfortable and springy memory foam mattress that I know you're going to love. Go to casper.com/brain and get your mattress 100 nights risk-free. Select the size mattress you need. Then in no time, you'll be enjoying a sleep surface that's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. You'll find its breathable design helps keep you cool and regulate your temperature throughout the night too. If you love risk-free as much as I do and you want $50 off your purchase, make sure to visit casper.com/brain and use the promo code BRAIN when checking out too. It's important you go to that link, casper.com/brain, and use the promo code BRAIN when checking out to get the discount. After all, I want you to get a heck of a deal on an already great priced mattress. Casper.com/brain.
Oh, I can't wait to go to bed tonight.
Okay, welcome back. This segment's called Ask Paul. It's where I read a listener email on the air and do my best to help solve a challenge or two. I have two messages, I think. I'm going to call this person Joe. This is message number one. Joe wrote me a few times, so I want to thank him for all his emails. He also had a question that I think I can answer, so I shall do my best. Joe, if you're listening, I've already sent you an email. I know your name's not Joe. He said, "I'm super interested in your understanding of these fundamental ways of connecting with people in a way that promotes healthy growth and learning along with our fellow human earth-dwelling companions. Also, I'm so wrapped up in my problems that I start to make myself the center of the world, and I don't want that. It can't always be about me." Now, I just read that. Thank you, Joe, for writing that. I just read that out of context. We've had a few conversations going back and forth, so it's hard to understand what he's asking there outside of the context. But I'm going to break it down to just the simplest question I can, which is this. How can we connect with each other in a way that promotes healthy growth and learning? And I think that's a great question. How do you connect with people that's not toxic, that's mentally and emotionally healthy? And the only thing I can do is dive into my own way of communicating with people, which is, at least one of the ways for me, is not seeing anyone as wrong. I mean, I go around and I see everyone
I try to see everyone for their ability to be right in themselves. Meaning, if we have a conversation and I believe I'm right about something and they believe they're right about something, I don't automatically, I don't think ever, say, no, you're wrong. Well, actually, that's not true. Sometimes I do say you're wrong because I have such hard data that I'm going to say, this is why you're wrong. But at the same time, if they prove me wrong, I'm also going to go, let me think about that. Maybe you have something there. I love the quote that I read a long time ago. It has something to do with as soon as you, I got to look it up. And I just had to look it up right now. And it's let go of your attachment to being right. And suddenly your mind is more open. You're able to benefit from the unique viewpoints of others without being crippled by your own judgment. And I believe that's by Ralph Marston. I love that quote. I think I read that in 2001 or so. And on that day, I realized, wow, I'm always attached to being right. I always want to be right. It's more important for me to be right than to nurture a relationship with someone else. That's what I had inside of me. And when I read that quote, I was like, oh my God, I got to print this, put it on my monitor and remind myself of that. I mean, plus it was also addressing my judgments against others. So it really helped me to understand that, hey, I'm not always right. And I decided to expand on that in myself and come to the conclusion that I'm always open to being wrong about everything I believe I'm right about. That statement feels good to me because I can be adamant in myself. I'm adamant. I know I'm right, but still be open to being proven wrong. Because now I have the best of both worlds, right? Now I'm not so crushed when somebody comes along with empirical evidence that says, no, you're wrong, and this is why. Then my world doesn't collapse on me, and I go, oh my God, you're right. Now I've learned something new, and I get excited learning something new, instead of being crushed that I've held on to such a belief with conviction and with such a tight grip that I refuse to be wrong about this. I just let go of my attachment to being right, and suddenly my mind was open, and I am able to benefit from the unique viewpoints of others without being crippled by my own judgment. And that's how I'm going to answer your message, Joe. Your question is that, how can we promote healthy learning and growth with our fellow human earth-dwelling companions? Just let go of your attachment to being right, with the addendum of staying open to being wrong about what you believe is right, or something like that. I think you get the gist. I hope that helps you, Joe, and thanks for helping me ponder that. There's a million other components of how I communicate with people that I could go on and on about, but I think that is a base level foundational concept that I keep in myself that not only keeps the peace, because, you know, I'm a middle child. I learned people pleasing. I learned non-confrontational behavior when I was very, very young. So that helped a lot too. And, you know, I just have this easy personality, which is also helpful. But the idea that I don't jump into righteousness in a conversation because I have to be right in myself really takes the pressure off of both of us, because now I'm not jumping down their throat and they know they are free to say what's on their mind because they know I'll consider what's on their mind. They may not consider what's on my mind. I mean, I've had that happen a lot. I've told some religious friends, hey, I'm open to being wrong about what I believe in my spiritual and religious beliefs. Are you? And many of them said, no. And I said, so a conversation with you would be kind of pointless. And I forget what they said. I know one of them was like, no, I'm willing to listen. But I said, so if I came up with something that really made you think, you would change your mind about your religious beliefs. And they would go, no. And so, okay, so let's not have this conversation because it's not going to go anywhere. No, I want to. And I would be like, well, I might, but Probably not, because what's the point? But that's a conversation for another day. Anyway, thank you, Joe. Thank you for writing that. I appreciate you. Let's go to letter number two right after this. All right, welcome back. I'm going to read another email for the Ask Paul segment. This is email number two that is written by someone I'll call Melissa. Melissa writes, I am nearing my wit's end. I don't know what to do or how to fix myself, and I feel totally lost. I don't remember if I've ever been happy, or if I have, when it last was. My mom and dad got divorced when I was just a baby. My mom didn't want us kids, and my dad did, so he raised us the best he could. He worked hard in a job that demanded long hours, so we had to be cared for by a babysitter much of the younger years. During this time, I was bullied by the babysitter's kids, my siblings, and the kids at school. I had few friends in high school and eventually wound up being in a relationship with a man who treated me terribly and cheated on me often for nearly 10 years until he left me. I finally got to hell with it all mindset and focused on myself. I was not planning on being with anyone for a long while, but after working on me for just under a year, I met my current boyfriend. He's the most amazing man, and he's truly so opposite from anyone I have ever dated before. We've already decided that we are done looking and will be together for the rest of our lives. However, I can't get past knowing that I'm going to wind up losing him if I can't fix myself. I've been trying to work on myself since my breakup with my previous boyfriend, and I so want the relationship that I have now. I've been really looking into myself and my issues to try to fix them, which is how I found your podcast. I have depression, but not bad enough for pills, or maybe it's not chemical or something. I also have anxiety and stress issues, self-worth issues, and my body image issues are massive. I like to work out and eat well, though between working 40 plus hours a week, school, and my commute, I have a hard time finding time to exercise. I listen to your podcast every day, listening to episode by episode in the order it was released until I eventually catch up to the present time. I try to be mindful and see a therapist twice a month, but nothing seems to be working. I actually feel like I'm getting worse sometimes. When I have a depression attack, I guess you could call it, my boyfriend tries his hardest to help me, but it's wearing on him. As time goes on, I feel hopeless and worse about myself. I keep telling him that I'm afraid that he'll leave me and that I am not good enough for him because I am so messed up. Now I get overwhelmed easily and I get anxious easier. Stress affects me for days. My boyfriend doesn't know what to do anymore. As I am now, I feel that I can't trust the world. I have shame and doubt about almost anything about me. I feel guilty for everything. I feel inferior. I feel isolated, hopeless. For my whole life, I was conditioned not to show emotions. I remember once my father told me that he loved me and was proud of me, but it was only once. I don't blame him due to his upbringing and raising the kids on his own while working so much, but this has really had an effect on me. I have an extremely difficult time understanding what it is that I'm feeling, and talking about my emotions is ridiculously uncomfortable. My siblings and other kids have always told me that I shouldn't feel things, or that I should feel a certain way, or that I'm wrong about how I'm feeling, and my mom has always only been concerned about how she looks to other people, so she made herself look like Mother of the Year in public. As you can tell, I have a lot of negative feelings toward my mother. I apologize for this essay of my life, but I really don't know what else to do. I don't feel like therapy is helping, and I can't imagine life without my boyfriend. The only reason I'm not completely and totally depressed all the time is because of him and all he has done to help me. I fear, however, that he will eventually lose patience with fixing someone so badly damaged. I don't have much money, and I feel like I have lost much of my social skills since I have been working so much in the last 10 years. I don't really have any friends aside from a couple of best friends that I hardly talk to anymore since they're at different stages of life than me. I hope you can give me some advice. I can't bear to lose my boyfriend, and I feel like nothing I am doing is helping me. At least, it's not enough. Thank you for your valuable time, Melissa. Okay, Melissa, thank you so much for sharing that. And one of the first things that comes up in my mind from your email is there's nothing else that could go wrong. And what you're doing is grasping onto the only thing that seems like it's going right, which is your relationship. But everything else is just terrible, or has created a perspective of the world that stresses you out, that causes you anxiety. And you mentioned all this stuff like shame and guilt and inferiority, self-image issues. I mean, everything you can think of, which is everything I talk about on this show. So thank you for listening to this show. I'm so glad you found this show, because everything you're talking about is everything I talk about. So step one, keep listening. But let's get into something a little deeper. Listening is going to help you understand your issues and hopefully dive into them. But I think one of the most important points of your message is the idea that you have been invalidated for so long. And one of the things about an invalidation is that when you have an emotion, you should be allowed to experience that emotion or express that emotion, not repress it, not swallow it, which is, it sounds like, what was happening since you were a child. You start crying, you shouldn't cry. You feel sad, you shouldn't feel sad. You feel anything negative that your caretakers, i.e. your parents, don't want to experience themselves, then that is stifled in you. I don't want you to feel sad because that would make me upset, so let me stifle it in you. I'm making some assumptions, but let's talk about this first, where your parents only had so many tools to know how to raise children, and the tools they used at least kept you alive. Now, that may not seem like much, because what kind of life is it when you don't feel worthy inside? You don't feel significant. You don't feel important. And then you grow up with these issues and you attract the wrong people in your life. And then you feel awkward in social situations and you just don't have the tools yourself. They didn't pass along any good tools, nor were they good role models for you to follow. I'm not, like I said, I'm making assumptions here, and some of them are probably wrong. Like you did talk about some of the things that your dad did that would show to a lot of people that he was a good role model, that he did everything he could to raise you kids. But you still didn't get enough from him, from what it sounds like in your letter. And with your mom, she was more focused on herself and not kids. And you're right, she may not have wanted you kids. I mean, let's be frank. Let's get this out in the open. There are moms and dads out there that don't want kids, and they have them anyway, and then they feel stuck with them, and then they finally escape from them. It just sounds awful when I say it. I don't even like saying it, but that's what happens, is that some people have kids that don't want them, and then they are stuck, quote, stuck, raising them or paying for them, or they're in their lives in some way. And then some parents ditch them, and they don't want anything to do with them. Now, to the kid, that seems like the worst possible thing that could happen. The one who brought you into the world doesn't want you. All right, let's face this. I mean, if this is what really happened, if this is how your mom really felt, let's face this. Okay, mom doesn't want me. I mean, what emotions come up when you think about that? What emotions come up when you think, mom doesn't want me, and she never did? Because if you haven't felt emotions about that, or if you've stifled those emotions up till now, I want you to feel them now. I want them to come up in you. Stop stifling these emotions. You are allowed to feel what you feel. And it could be one of the worst feelings in the world. And maybe you were told all your life, don't feel those bad feelings, but I want you to feel those bad feelings. I think the number one step you need to take, very first step, is to access some of these emotions that have been buried for so long. I mean, you know my stepfather story, right? I tell it a million billion times. But the one that I really look at as the first step out of my depression, out of my low self-esteem, out of a lot of stuff that I can relate to in your story, was when I finally admitted my hatred toward him. And these deep emotional feelings that came up, in this sadness and these tears and all this stuff I didn't know I was holding on to, because I was always brought up to believe that you shouldn't hate people. So I never experienced hatred. I never expressed it. And then suddenly I felt it and it came out, and it was a massive release to finally experience it, to finally allow myself to have an emotion that I believed I shouldn't have. So step number one, all the emotions that you've stifled, I am allowing you, I'm giving you permission, not that you need my permission, but if you do, you are allowed to feel anything that comes up. Don't stifle it. Don't go, well, I shouldn't feel that way. Never do that to yourself. I shouldn't feel that way. That's like the worst thing you can do to yourself, isn't it? One of the worst things is to stifle yourself. It's bad enough that you were stifled by your parents, by your siblings, by other kids in school, but let's not stifle ourselves. When the voice comes up, I shouldn't think that way, I shouldn't feel that way, that's stifling, that's repressing. That is toxifying your own body, your own mind. Because what you're doing is you're not releasing it. You're stuffing it down. So every time you have an emotion that you choose not to have, or it may not feel like a choice, then you add to that layer or underlayer of depression, that underlayer of anxiety, that underlayer of anything, stress that you feel probably on a daily, hourly, minute-by-minute basis that you're feeling now. So, like I said, first step is when an emotion comes up, and this is might be a hard part for you, because when the emotions have come up in the past, you've learned to do it quickly and efficiently to not feel it, to stuff it back down. You've learned to do that. So what I want you to do is start practicing. And you practice understanding what emotion you're feeling. The practice is when you feel any stress, anxiety, shame, guilt, self-image issues, self-esteem, self-worth issues, you need to go beyond that and drill down a little bit or a lot. Like drill down as in go into the next layer of what that means. For example, I'm feeling stressed. I'm stressed. Well, what's causing that stress? Well, this person yelled at me at work. And a drill down question I like to ask myself is, well, how is that a problem? How is that bad? Well, I don't like being yelled at work. Yeah, but how is that a problem for you? Well, if they yell at me, then they make me feel bad about myself. And then you drill down even further. Yeah, but how is that bad? How is that a problem? Well, it's a problem because if I feel bad about myself, then I don't feel very good. And you're not really drilling down at that point. You're just saying more similar things, but then you continue to drill down until you get to an emotional state. You go down even further and you say, okay, so how is not feeling good about myself a bad thing? And you might come up with some other things. And the idea is just to start drilling into these high-level words that you've used. Like, for example, you said low self-image. What does that even mean, low self-image? Well, I feel bad about the way my body looks. Okay, so what about your body don't you like? Oh, where do I start? this, and this. And I my pants don't look right, and my shirts don't look right. And then when I take those off, oh, I don't even want to go there. I just feel so bad about this stuff. All right, why is it bad that your body doesn't look good to you? Well, if my body doesn't look good to me, then I won't be able to attract someone. All right, so you won't be able to attract someone, even though you already have someone in your life who apparently wants to stay with you. So he is accepting you and he's loving you for the way you are now. we can say that's not it. So you're not trying to attract anyone new. You have someone that accepts you the way you are now. So what else is bad about having this low self body image? Well, if I have a low self body image and I don't feel attractive, then how can anyone else be attracted to me? Okay, let's play with that angle. How can my boyfriend be attracted to me? You can even say, I know he's not attracted to me because I don't like the way I look. Okay, great, let's work with that. How is that a bad thing? Now we're drilling down again. Well, if he's not attracted to me, he might leave me. Okay, well, knowing he hasn't left you yet, that probably isn't true. Let's go beyond that, and let's just say that why is he staying with you then? Well, he's staying with me because he loves me, and he'll accept me no matter what. Okay, that's a good comment to make. But let's just say that deep down, he thinks that you could look better. Let's just say that he thinks that. I'm not saying he does. Let's just say that he believes that, yeah, your body could be better. All right, like, again, we're being frank here. This may or may not be true. It doesn't matter. We're just exploring this to see where we go inside with our emotions. If he thinks my body could improve, then how does that make me feel? How does that make you feel if he thinks your body could improve? Well, I feel inferior. I feel like I'm not good enough. Okay, good. Now we're getting somewhere. How is it bad that you don't feel good enough? Well, if I don't feel good enough, then I don't feel like someone would love me. Okay, good. There's even deeper. Now it's starting to get into some deeper stuff. It's not just about, oh, I don't like my body, therefore someone might leave me. It goes further down. Okay, so if someone doesn't love you, how is that a bad thing? How is it? How is that a bad thing? And especially, what do you feel if someone doesn't love you? Because you're going to have emotions that come up. And I want them to come up for you. I don't want you to feel them all the time, but I want whatever has not come up in the past, whatever has been stifled, needs to come up. It needs to be unstifled, needs to be expressed, not repressed, in some way, shape, or form. Now, whether that means you contact one of your rarely talked to best friends and say, you know, I've had this thing on my mind for a long time, and I'm just looking for someone to share it with, someone that I feel safe sharing to. You might have to do that. I'm not saying you have to do that, but you might want to. And if you don't want to, maybe that's even a further indication that you should. There's that word, should. You should do it. Well, I'm going to use that word because you should express what's not been expressed for a long time. Because you're right. You have been taught not to express emotion. Even reading your email, I didn't see anything about emotions. I mean, I saw, you know, shame and guilt, and yes, those can be seen as emotional states, but what's underneath that? Like, if you feel guilty, how does that make you feel? That's an interesting question, right? If you feel guilty, how does feeling guilty make you feel? Oh, what about guilt makes you feel a certain way? Does it make you feel bad? What does bad mean? The idea is to continue exploring how you feel. Don't just stop at, I feel guilty. I feel ashamed. Don't stop there. Continue drilling in and drilling down until you get to some deep layer stuff, because that deep layer, deep leveled stuff is going to reveal what's really going on at the deepest level and will reveal to you why you're depressed, why you get anxious, why you get stressed, and why you have all these other things going on. There are some root issues that these things stem from that may be revealed. This is why some therapies can take so long, is that every week or every other week, you talk for an hour and you reveal some tiny layer of emotion that you haven't even broken through to get to the underlayer of that emotion and underlayer of that emotion. Some tiny big level word like shame that you're still talking about what you feel ashamed about maybe weeks or months or even years later, but you never look what's under that shame. That's the exploration process. That's drilling in to these high level words, these loaded words, like shame and guilt and embarrassment and humiliation and upset. I mean, there's a high-level word, right? I feel upset. What do you mean you feel upset? How are you upset? I'm upset because this person did this to me. Yes, but what do you mean you're upset? What does upset mean? I'm upset that he did this to me, so that makes me upset. Upset doesn't really mean anything. Upset's just a word. It's not an emotion. It's just something is unsettling. Oh, unsettling. What does that mean? Well, it means that I'm feeling unsettled. Well, how is feeling unsettled bad? When I feel unsettled, I feel a little lost. And then you keep coming up with words. The idea is just to keep coming up with words until one hits the target. But you're always drilling deeper and deeper. There's the surface area that you're touching upon, and then you go deeper and deeper and deeper until you hit something emotional. So the whole point of this first step for you is to start connecting with the emotions. What do you feel inside? And you've been so good at doing lightning fast reactions to not feel the emotion that you need to start catching yourself, which is why you might want to start asking yourself some tougher questions. Like, why is it a bad thing if your boyfriend leaves you? I mean, I know emotions are going to come up for that. Let's just say he left you. Tomorrow he left you. Can't take it anymore. He left. What emotions come up for you? I know there are emotions there. All right, let's just say he didn't leave and everything's fine. There are probably emotions there too. You're an emotional person and you've been restricted to not experiencing them. So I want you to start presenting scenarios to yourself. What if your father died today? How would that feel? What if your mom called out of the blue and said, I'm sorry for everything I've done to you. I regret it. What emotions come up for you then? What if that one bully in school that did that one memorable thing, or many memorable things, contacted you on Facebook and said, I did something when we were young, and I feel so bad about it. I am truly sorry. I was stupid, and if I could take it back, I would. How would that feel? These are all emotions that are inside of you. So no matter what, even if you weren't allowed to feel them as a child, it doesn't mean you don't have to now. Now, feeling them is different than expressing them, because when you express them, you've also been taught how to talk, how to communicate with people. Just like in your email to me, there aren't too many words about deep emotions. The word depression and anxiety and stress and things like that come up, but there's nothing in there that says, you know what? I am so angry at such and such for what they did. Now, writing to me, you're trying to get the story out and you don't want to get lost in it, but it might be a good idea to get to the point, and this is my second step for you, is when you write, when you talk to someone, I need you to be okay with the following. Hate, anger, complete and utter sadness, loss. I need you to be okay experiencing these things. You know, I read once, I don't know who it is. It's a doctor or a therapist, or maybe it's another coach that used to use a technique that he believed that anything repressed turned into someone you wanted to kill. I'm not saying I agree with this, but it's an interesting place to visit inside your mind. For example, if you think of who do you want to kill? I mean, what comes up? What's the first name that comes up for you? Who do you want to kill? Even if you don't really want to, just what name would come up? And I don't want you to. I don't want you to do that for real. I just want it to be in your imagination. This is your safe mind where you can think and feel and imagine anything that you want to imagine. Or who do you want to hurt? Who do you want to punch in the face? I want you to have thoughts that you've never had before or that you've stifled, because I want you to know what it feels like to have thoughts that you probably weren't allowed to have, or at least conditioned not to experience or express. For example, when you think of your mom, what would you like to say or do to her? If you had no consequences whatsoever and you were allowed to say or do anything you wanted to her, against her, about her, what would it be? I mean, visit that in your mind. Play out the scenario. Go through the whole thing, regardless of consequences. Because if you hurt her in your mind, she's just going to pop right back up. She'll be fine. But the idea is to go through it to a completion level in your mind, to understand where your thoughts take you. Because I really believe that a lot of what causes us stress, what causes us anxiety, what causes, or at least partial cause for depression, is not taking thoughts to completion, not doing behavior to completion. For example, you may have a thought like, I'd really like to punch that guy. And then you have another thought that says, oh, no, that's not right. I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't think that. Let me instead put on this denial and stuff that thought down. And now I'll have this layer of denial, so I don't have to think that anymore. That causes more of what you don't want in your body, toxifying your system. So instead, you visit it another way. You go the opposite direction. I'd really like to punch that guy. Let me imagine what that would be like. Pow. Ow. Oh, there he goes. He falls down on the ground. Oh, a tooth fell out. Oh, and I could get graphic, but I'm not going to. And then he's holding his mouth. And then he looks at you and he says, what did you do that for? And he's crying. And I'm just making up this scenario, but it's your mind. You can make up anything you want. What happens when you play that out, play that through? I really believe the mind wants to do things to completion. And that is called what I call closing the loop. That is called completing the story, finishing it up so you have closure. You may not be able to do this in real life, but when you do it in your mind, it doesn't stifle or re-stifle emotions or thoughts that you are allowed to have. So I want you to play with that idea. That's the second step, is just to play with the idea that you are allowed to have all these thoughts and ideas come to mind to completion, to figure out what would happen if you said exactly what you wanted to say in that moment. Now, step three, these aren't really in sequential order, but you just want to keep these in mind, is because you've reached a point where nothing seems to work. This is the breakdown before the breakthrough. This is where you have tried everything and you've got nothing left. I want to say congratulations, because when you get to that point, that means you can try things you've never done before, because who cares anyway? Right? I know, listen to me, making it sound so easy. You can try and say and do anything you want, because it's not going to get any worse. How could it get any worse? I'm not talking about with your boyfriend. I understand that you have a great relationship with your boyfriend, and he sounds like he's the perfect guy in your life right at this time. And you have some valid concerns. Your valid concern is, I don't want him to continue trying to fix me because he's going to get sick of it and leave. And that might happen. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. That could happen, because eventually someone will want to be in an equal relationship where both people want equal treatment. Both people want, I mean, you are there to help each other out and support each other through the good and the bad, yes. But when one person is always supporting and the other person always needs help, it can get tiring. It can start to drain the energy and suck the life out of the relationship. And I understand that you might feel like you are doing that. The good news is you found someone who wants to help, who wants to be there for you, who is doing everything he can to help you through this stuff. And you're also working on yourself, and he recognizes that. I guarantee you he wants to stay because he recognizes that you're working on yourself. The day you give up working on yourself is when you need to worry that he might leave. I mean, I don't think you should worry about him leaving while you work on yourself. Now, I would recommend that you stop telling him that you're afraid that he'll leave, because that's going to be harder and harder to hear from you. I'm afraid that you'll leave. I'm afraid that you'll leave. I'm so broken. I'm afraid that you'll leave. I think that there needs to be a step into less worry and more self-care. The more you care about yourself, the more energy you put into caring about yourself, showing compassion for yourself, the more he's going to feel like you really are putting in a lot of effort. And I think he believes that already. I think he believes that you're putting in a lot of effort from what you told me. But if all your energy is pouring into the thoughts and words that I'm afraid that you'll leave me, that energy is more towards trying to keep him in your life than trying to work on yourself, if that makes sense. For example, I could spend hours thinking about, oh, I know my girlfriend's going to leave. I know if she's going to leave if I don't work on myself. And I just can't fix myself. And she's going to think that I'm broken. And eventually she won't be able to handle it. And she will leave. And she'll have every right to leave because I just couldn't fix myself. All that time I spent thinking about her leaving or wanting to keep her is all the more time that I could have spent diving into myself. Does that make sense? All the things going on in your life, even though I know you've been doing it for a long time, and you're probably gotten to the point where you're done. You just feel like you've done everything you can and there's nothing else you can do, which is why you wrote to me and you're trying to figure things out. Yes, but I do want you to, how do I say this nicely? Lay off the idea that you're going to lose someone in your life, because the more thought and energy you put into what you don't want to happen, the more likely you'll feed that and make it happen. And that's hard to do because what we fear coming true is what we manifest coming true, because the people around us who are trying to think and feel and support us in a way that we need, they keep hearing the same things over and over again. I think you'll leave me. I know you'll leave me if I don't fix myself. Or they'll feel it from you. I feel like you're going to leave me if I don't fix myself. It keeps getting fed into their mind. The point is, stop spending so much time thinking you're going to lose something and start spending more time just focusing on what you need to do for you so the energy goes in the right direction. Because right now the energy is going in the direction of, I'm afraid, I fear, instead of, I need to work on myself, and what do I need to do next, and I'm going to explore these emotions, and that will actually relieve some of the tension that might be building in the relationship too, because that's a lot of pressure when you think that you're responsible for the relationship being held together. And if he's feeling that pressure, like you're the only one that's keeping this entire relationship together, then it's going to affect both of you. When we come back, I'm going to wrap this up with step number 3. I know we're running a little long and I apologize about that, but I have a few more things to say on this and then we'll just close the show shortly. Be right back. All right, coming back to Melissa's letter, I just want to finish this up. We're talking about step or item number 3, which is the breakdown before the breakthrough. I think it's a great place to be because now you can take the chances and take the risks that you didn't think you had. Now, hear me out. When you are in a place where everything is going wrong, that's when you can do and say things that you might not want to have said before because you think you might lose something. In the past, you might think, I might lose my relationship with my mom. Well, guess what? If you don't have a relationship with your mom, then maybe it's time to say the things that you've wanted to say to her. Oh, that might be scary. And I'm not saying you have to, but that is an option. Like, you might want to say something that you haven't said to her. It's that incomplete thought, that open loop, that something you need closure for. Like, I've always wanted to tell my mom, what? I'm mad at you because you did this, or I am so hurt because you did that. What do you want to say? And do you want to say it to her? Do you want to write her a letter? Do you want to write it and never send it? This is the point where you felt like before, like you get to that point, to hell with it. I don't care anymore. This is what I'm going to say because I've got nothing to lose. And you say it. It's like I had this one work friend once that I hadn't seen or talked to in months, and he called out of the blue, and he's like, hey, guess who it is? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And he goes, well, guess. And I said, okay, sounds like John or Bill or James, or I couldn't guess his name, and he kept me guessing, and we were talking and talking, and he just kept the joke going. He never revealed who he was, and then he was saying things like, oh, come on, you don't know who I am, and I was starting to get a little disturbed by it. I was starting to get a little sick of his game, and I was like, just tell me who you are so we can actually have a normal conversation instead of you joking about this the whole time, and he wouldn't do it. And I finally got to the point where, well, I've got nothing left to lose. I'm already pissed off. He will not reveal who he is, and I'm just getting sick of it. And I finally said, if you're going to act this way, I'm going to hang up on you because I'm getting quite sick of this. And I forget what else I said, but I was in the moment, and all this stuff came out of my mouth. Because at that point, I mean, I couldn't get any angrier, and so I just, blah, spoke my mind. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry, this is Jim, you're right. You said, I mean, he really backed off and he finally revealed who he was. And I said, great, now we can have a normal conversation like real friends would have. But that's what it took to break the pattern that we were in. Now, that call only lasted like 15, 20 minutes, whereas you might have been holding on to this stuff for many, many years. But it doesn't matter how long you've been holding on to it. Because what happens is when you feel like you have something more to say or more to do, then it stays in you until that's done. And being at the lowest point where you finally just go, I need to get this off my mind, and you actually do it, again, how much worse can it get? How much worse can your relationship get with your mother when you finally tell her what's been upsetting you all these years? It's not going to go anywhere anyway, so maybe it's time to say it, or maybe not. I'm not giving you the advice to tell your mom what you've always wanted to say, but I guarantee something's in there. Maybe not with your mom, or maybe so, or maybe with your dad, or maybe not, or who knows. Maybe you have friends in school. Maybe you have things to say to your siblings. All these things that you probably haven't said and wanted to say are probably still in you. And you can think about going through your life, holding on to the stress, anxiety, depression, low self this, low self that, or you can say the thing that you finally wanted to say, regardless of the consequences, and just let the chips fall where they may. Again, I'm not telling you to do this. I mean, the whole idea is to find closure. Get to a point where you finish these thoughts that you're having or allow the thoughts to come up. This could be in the form of just writing down how you feel. Writing down, when we were six and you did this, I hated your guts. I wanted to hurt you so bad, and have this stuff come out. That's so important. If you've spent your life repressing, causing depression, then the idea of having true natural emotions come out is a step in the right direction. You could write a letter to someone and not send it, because once you write it, that's the expression process. Or you could call someone up and say, I've been wanting to tell you this for so long. I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people that said, I finally said something to this person, and I finally got it off my chest. And half the time, they hear, I'm sorry. And the other half, they don't hear from that person ever again. It severs the relationship. But the person who did it finally got past it, finally reached that closure point. I really believe that a lot of what causes us stress, anxiety, and depression, and all that stuff is not reaching a closure, holding stuff in that we want to say to someone, having emotions that we weren't allowed to feel that we should absolutely be allowed to feel, that we deserve to feel, because that's how we're made up. We are emotional creatures, and we need to have these emotions and sometimes express them. And sometimes you just want to be angry with someone and stand up for yourself. And that's where I would like you to be. If you're not in a place where you're standing up for yourself, why not? Why can't you do that now after all that's happened, after how you feel after all these years when nothing seems to go right except that one thing in your life that you want, your relationship? I think it's time to stand up everywhere else and go, no, I don't think I'm going to stand by while you say that about me or do this to me. That's not something I want in my life. You know, I don't know if you do that now or not, but you probably haven't for a long time. So there's a lot of directions that we can take this, Melissa, but the three things that I've given you today, I really want you to explore. And if you've listened to all the episodes, then as you explore inside of you what emotions come up or what other thoughts come up, look for those particular subject matters at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Just use the search field and try to find the ones that deal with that. There does need to be a lot of self-compassion and self-nurturing inside of you, and probably a lot more closure of some sort. It's like, I was so mad at my wife when she wanted to get divorced because I wanted us to get therapy. I wanted us to talk about it more. And I just held on to this anger, and we were separated, and we were going back and forth in chat. And I was finally like, I'm so mad at you. And it still wasn't a release. So I finally wrote this email. And I wrote this entire email out and saying, you aren't giving us a chance, and it's all your fault, and this and that. And I know I did things that are wrong, but you didn't give me another chance, and so on and so on. And all this anger was coming out in the email. And I'm like, I'm going to send this. And then I reread it. And I'm like, well, I don't feel so angry about that anymore. And so I deleted that, and I changed this sentence, and this time I felt a little less energy toward that and a little less upset about that, but still, it's your fault, and we should go get therapy. You shouldn't end this so soon. And that was the one I was going to send, and I was like, okay, let me reread it just in case. And then I reread it, and I was like, oh my God, I don't feel at all angry, or at least the anger I used to feel. In fact, I feel like I've gotten these emotions out of me. I feel like I've gotten everything I want to say out of me just by typing it. And so I rewrote the entire thing and felt like, wow, I'm not angry at her at all anymore. In fact, I'm angry at myself for not focusing on me the whole relationship. I mean, in the sense that what needed fixing in me. I needed to fix my judgment. I needed to fix the way I support her, which I didn't in many ways that she deserved. I needed to fix things in me, but I spent most of my time focused on her and what she did to me and what she should have done differently. That's what happens. But the idea that I wrote to her and I was angry at her and I was pointing the finger at her, that stuff came out of me and expressed in a way that I have never expressed before. That's what I want you to do. At minimum, write a letter and say what you want to say, and don't filter. Turn your filters off. That's number one. Don't filter things like, I hate you. No, I shouldn't say hate. I am very upset with you. No, don't do that. Keep the word hate in there if that's what you feel. That's what I want you to do, is just create an unfiltered letter, go through an unfiltered visualization where you think about what you want to say or do to the person, or even make it real. Give them a call. That might be a step later, in an advanced lesson somewhere down the road. But I think you have enough to work with today. Certainly send me an update. I want to know where you are, how it's going, and I want to hear your progress. There's some hard steps that are involved here, but they're not impossible. You have the ability to do it, and I know you can do it. You are worthy. You are deserving, too. And when you start doing this for yourself, it's going to continue building that self-worth and a lot of things that you may not feel inside. Self-worth, self-esteem, self-confidence, the courage to stand up for yourself, to honor your boundaries. All of that stuff is a step-by-step, bit-by-bit process of building. So send me an update. Thanks for writing, Melissa. And thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. We'll be right back. I'll say some thank yous and close the show after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank today's sponsor. Visit Casper.com/brain and check out their mattresses. Free delivery to the US and Canada and $50 off when you use the promo code BRAIN. You know, sleep is a massive step towards self-improvement. Visit Casper.com/brain today. And I want to remind you of The Overwhelmed Brain book. The best way to describe this book is to tell you that if you want to get to a fully self-empowered place and you want a guide to get you there, The Overwhelmed Brain book is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and maybe even your local public library. It outlines the path that you can take to reach that self-empowered place. If you like the show, you'll love the book. And if you're in the patron program, I hope you enjoyed the episode where I addressed the fear of intimacy and long-term relationships. That's a deep topic and it can have a lot of connections to many things in your life. If you didn't get a chance to tune into that, check it out. And if you're not a member of the patron program yet, you're missing out on quite a bit. I address all kinds of topics in that program. You get private episodes, worksheets, video trainings, and even email coaching. Visit patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com and you can check out the program and you even get a taste of one of the private episodes for free. I also want to thank you if you're using the Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. The Amazon link is the easiest way to support the show. So if you've been listening for, I don't know, a bounteous number of months or years, use that Amazon link every time you shop. We get pennies for every dollar you spend, but it adds up. Your shopping habits are making a difference, so thank you. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I was going to read you one last email during this closing segment, but how long is this episode going to be? So I'm going to save it for next week. Sorry about that, but you know, your commute's probably done, or your laundry's probably done, or you're sitting there going, when is this going to be over? So this is it. And you know what I'm going to say. Keep your mind open and step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.